The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Indeed it does. Fast Money starting right now live from the NASDAQ market site in New York's Times Square. I'm Joe Kernan. And again, for Melissa Lee, you'll be able to tell because Guy, the expression on his face. Our traders on the desk are Pete Najarian, Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, and Guy Adami.
Wow.
You're up, Guy.
Hi, Joe.
How are you, my man? Tonight, a potential antitrust apocalypse, we're calling it, is hanging over big tech. And one top lawyer, he's brought his magnetic business cards. He's going to tell us the tech giant that's most at risk. But first, we're going to start with the market rally. The Dow surging for the second day in a row, now up a whopping 700 points in just 2 days. It's the biggest two-day rally since January, even as a trade tariff deadline with Mexico looms. But does it really? We might hear something about that. But despite the euphoria, there are signs of trouble. But is that good or bad? Safety stocks are soaring, with REITs and utilities leading the way. The 10-year yield remains near its lowest levels. And it gave back some ground today, the yield did, after that ADP report. Crude is collapsing, falling deeper into a bear market. So can you trust this market bounce? And what do you do right now, Guy Adami? And I reference it. Sometimes trouble is good. You don't want people feeling too good about things, do you?
No, look at you. Sometimes trouble is good, right? A little acrimony sometimes. It gets the
juices. I don't like it here.
Keeps you on edge.
I mean, you don't want people being too
complacent.
comfortable in their
They are
position.
Too complacent. I mean, I think Pete would agree with this. The VIX in this environment should be, in my opinion, should be closer to 21, 22 than to 17. So I think there is a latent complacency there because the last 10 years, every single dip in the market's been a buying opportunity. And you've been rewarded for buying the market and for being short volatility. I do think it's different this time. I do think yields going lower is a warning sign. I do think that utilities, XLU making all-time high in this environment is a warning sign. I do think that gold rallying is a warning sign. That being said, you can't discount the fact that the last 2 days has been very impressive. My inclination would be to fade this move.
Well, it's very impressive off of oversold conditions. And so we do this all the time. Is bad news bad news? Is bad news good news? Is good news bad news? And for the market right now, they are putting the Fed in play. And the market is saying that bad news is good news. Bad news, folks, is bad news. I think if we get two cuts this year, it is not augur well for not only S&P earnings, but the overall volatility environment. I think on Friday, you're going to get an opportunity with a payroll number coupled with today's beige book that said everything looks actually quite fine, coupled with Fed comments from yesterday, to hear that good news will probably be bad news for the equity market, because I think equities have priced in way too much Fed here. I think the bond markets are way too far ahead as well, but it's equity markets I'd be more concerned about.
Let me push back for a second.
Sure. All right. We love acrimony.
All right. So when you're talking about the Fed, that if the Fed cuts once or twice, that doesn't make me feel good.
But
let me ask you something. It's the same. So we have the same set of data, right? Would you rather have the Fed do nothing on it, or would you rather have the Fed cut on it? The data is what it is, right? The economy is doing whatever it's doing. I'd rather have the Fed. I know you think that's
great question.
Because things are cheaper. Mortgages are cheaper. You know, having debt is cheaper.
I think, and if you look at what's been going on with APRs and credit cards, we were at 20-year highs in car, you know, revolving loans. But your question is a good one, which is, with the same data, wouldn't you rather have a lower rate environment? I'm telling you that I think the Fed's going to need to see worse data. The Fed's going to need to see continuing deterioration in the ISM, which we got 3-year lows. PMIs around the world, but most notably our data, to cut twice, and that will be a bad environment. But all of the things equal, with lower rates, you're right, it's good.
We got that print today on ADP, put the June Fed funds up 10% from last week, 33% for a June cut, 33% chance of a June cut. So, I mean, 97%.
Well, Leisman was on with us today at noon, and he was talking about three cuts this year.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, it's not, when I hear you saying two, I'm thinking two doesn't sound that bad compared to the three.
But it's not just dependent on bad news. It's dependent on good news on the inflation front. That's what everybody's missed this time.
What's good news? Good news is inflation.
Good news is that inflation. Well, I don't know. I always thought low inflation was good news. But now it's bad news that it's too low, I guess.
Don't we have deflation? Isn't that a risk?
Disinflation. We're not
disinflation,
going down.
Disinflation is not a bad thing. You're right. Deflation, look at Japan. Look at 30 years of trying to recover from a credit bubble. Guess what we had 10 years ago?
Right.
But where your response was that the central bank threw everything they could at the problem in terms of liquidity. I think deflation is a risk for the world.
Joe, I'm going to say something that I've said many, many times when we've been on this desk and we're down 500 points one day, we're down 300 points the next day, and we talk about algorithms, right? High-frequency trading, some of that stuff that's pushing the market around. Hey, I'm going to get out there right now and say, hey, it happens in these upward moves as well.
Right.
I mean, I think we're seeing algorithmic moves that are triggered off of words, whether it's the Fed, whether it's trade, whatever it might be. And that is why we're seeing these violent, even intraday moves. So to your point, the fact that volatility where we're trading right now, way too low. Way, way, way too low. A 16 VIX gives you a 1% move per day. Well, I can tell you, if you're looking at what we're doing per day, close to close is different. I'm talking about the movement
intraday
we're getting right now. So because of that, we should be trading probably a 20, maybe 21, something like that. And so the fact that we're trading here in the 16s right now, I think it's a great opportunity to do something, Joe, where you protect your portfolio or you exit your stocks if they've performed well and you stock replacement with options in front of that. But either way, you've got to be owning options right now, mostly puts I'm talking about, spiders, whatever it is that might protect your portfolio, because you buy when you can, not when you have to. And in this market, we easily could see a VIX trading over 20 in a couple of days.
In a bull market, when you get a sharp break that's really scary and really quick.
Yes.
That's usually a sign of a continuing bull market because it shakes people out. Is the same thing true in a down market? If you get a sharp move back up, can you trust it? That's what worries me. Is it you know, it's the drip, drip, drip in a bear market that scares me. Or the long-lasting bull markets, they go up a little at a time, and next thing you know, you're up two or three.
I would also say we're looking at this trade market that we're talking about right now. It started off with China, but now just look around the world in terms of the tariffs that are being talked about everywhere. So this is no longer just a China trade war. This is becoming a bit of a war with everybody, potentially. And I don't mean that necessarily that we're not doing the right thing. All I'm saying is that changes the dynamic immensely to me. And that means you've got to put yourself in a position to be able to make money because there are great opportunities. Every single day there are opportunities, but it's a trading environment. You have to scrunch down what your time frame is right now.
So I think if you look at where vol is, I agree with that. And ultimately, back to what Karen was saying, I think vol reflects a Fed put that's back in the market. But back to the market we had today and back to stock picking. I mean, look at how Apple's begun to decouple from the SM8. So Apple's actually basically considered to be a trade war stock, poster child number one, actually has rallied 4% or so over the last couple of days. SMH was back down today. I think that's encouraging because ultimately, I don't think Apple should be, tabbed directly to the semis and all the other cyclicals that are related to trade. So there's stuff you can do, Pete, out there in this market.
You know, my biggest problem with Fed rate cuts, you know, Larry Kudlow in early May said, the president has said greatest economy in the history of the republic. It might be. I'm not arguing that. But if that is, in fact, the case, why are we even having conversations about Fed rate cuts?
To
me, it doesn't.
Why not have the pedal to the metal?
Why
not have the pedal to the metal if there's no inflation?
Why don't, I'll give you something novel. Why, when the rest of the world is trying to devalue their currency, why don't we do something novel like strengthen ours? Because it's in all of our best interests, including the people at home. Happening maybe for the wrong reasons. You know, I know it sounds crazy, but the Fed's job isn't to save the market. It's to save the economy. And the two are much different things. I think we have an opportunity here in keeping rates the same or even raising rates to actually strengthen the foundation that's been weakened by 10 years of ridiculous
Fed. So we export nothing? We got a president.
What do we export? Why don't you tell me what we
Well, no, I'm saying if the dollar gets too strong, we've got a president that all he does is worry about trade deficits.
What do we
export? You don't need a stronger dollar.
I would think the consumers watching at home would disagree. I think a weak dollar is a tax that nobody ever sees. You know, everybody thinks it's great to have a weak dollar. The administration for decades has talked about that.
Right.
It's wrong. If you think about it.
111 on the euro. I mean, didn't you think it'd be? I thought it'd be much higher.
I think if you buy things, you want your buying power to be stronger, and it's stronger if the dollar. I know that's not great for multinationals, but it's great for the folks at home.
One thing I'd say real quick is that if we're in such a great market the last couple of days, up 700 points, if it's so great out there, why are we seeing not just the utilities? How about the metals? I mean, when we see gold starting to
not
make
so
moves,
much.
We're seeing paper and silver every single day now. Different, either individual. individual names or the ETF or whatever, you're starting to see the precious metals. People are jumping in there, Joe, and that's what I see. I see in the derivatives market.
You're saying
huge
you see it
move.
Positive to the upside?
Well, I'm just seeing gold.
So buyers of silver and gold are people that are running scared.
Right. Yeah. Exactly yeah, right. Because, doesn't mean they're right.
Because I'm oil just, should be going too if right. it's inflationary.
And meanwhile, oil's going the other not. Way. It's going the wrong way. Yes. Right.
So, exactly right. And in fact, so to dovetail that, Joe, if you look at the steel companies again, they were back on the sell side. If you look at a lot of the materials companies, I say this all the time, not because I think they're a bad company, but look at Glencore stock if you want to understand some of the pricing pressure, some of the leverage pressure, and some of the impact of the global commodities industry, because they're probably the biggest and the best commodities trader out there. That stock's been on the skids now for really 6 months, and I think until you start to see that improve, I'm not in there buying commodities wholesale.
Did you people actually trade things today? They told me to ask you if you would.
I did not.
I haven't traded things in 26 years, so I can't.
Well, you have today?
I'm not allowed. I'm not allowed.
You can do spiders?
Huh?
I guess you could
do ETFs.
I guess I could do ETFs.
Well, but I'm morally opposed to those.
One of the things I did a couple days ago was got exposure actually to what I think are going to be bond yields that begin to normalize a little bit more off these levels. So I've been owning both calls and some spreads in the TBT, which to me is, again, the opposite of your view on Treasuries rallying, actually, that they're going to sell off in long end. I just think we have to reconcile bond markets that are screaming something that I'm not sure the Fed really thinks is taking place.
Joe, I'll tell you, I've done quite a bit of trading in the last 2 or 3 or 4 days, and it's been because of the fact that I'm seeing all these short-term type things. I'll give you a great example. GLD, monstrous buyers just last week. I'm already out of that trade. GDXJ, which is the miners, junior miners, that gives you a little extra torque. So I bought into that one. I don't know if everybody knows that they're the junior miners, but, and they move a little bit faster than GDX. But Dropbox is another one. But everything I'm seeing, and I've been saying this since the start of the year, everything that we're seeing does not go out more than 2 months. I mean, so everything is short term. Everything seems like it's tradable, and there's not a whole lot of investing going on out there.
Yes, there's a time when I invite people over and we have an applause thing. How quickly can we get that? Because Savita is here.
Savita is here. We did it. They did it quick. This rally may not be here to stay.
Now I got to read this after I had it all ready to go. Anyway, trade tensions are rising. Our next guest says things are likely going to get worse before they get better. This is not different, Savita Subramanian, than what we've been hearing already from the traders. You're head of quantitative strategy at Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, and welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah. Great to be here.
You see a disconnect between
what's going on.
I've seen equity markets in the 10-year, and it just looks like maybe not everything is has great
agreeing.
Underpinnings. But I don't know if that's true.
Well, it's interesting because I think what's driven the market higher or what's kept it at these levels isn't necessarily the cyclical stuff. It's the yieldy, quality, defensive stuff. So I think the stock market is singing right along with the bond market and saying, don't buy anything with any cyclical hair on it and just buy like utilities and, tobacco stocks. And I think that that's kind of what's going on internally with the market. I mean, I think if you look at what's happened so far, what was surprising is that we've seen, such a rapidity and such a kind of a heightening of the tensions. And, what's called into question now is whether we see a full-blown resolution kind of early into this year, or whether this extends into next year and turns into an election issue. And I think that the market's response is going to determine that. So if the market drops another 10%, we'll likely hear policymakers dial back the rhetoric a little bit, and we'll get to a better place. But I do think that there's something going on right now that is a little bit unnerving. I mean, if you look at oil prices, if you look at the slope of the yield curve, everything is telling you that we're heading into a recession. And, I mean, the equity market is holding up better, but it's not necessarily the cyclical stuff that's pulling it higher.
It's just sub 4% unemployment. We'll see Friday. The ADP didn't help, but that number has been so off, now and again. I mean, it was 275, I think, last month.
Right.
And that was validated by the real number that came out on Friday. This is an important number, I guess, on Friday. But you think that the psychology of, because the trade stuff has not filtered into any numbers yet.
The real economy.
But
no,
you think
right.
psychologically that could have caused corporate managers to pull back in a big way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're already seeing that. So I'll tell you one interesting data point. If you look at like the companies that are guiding above versus below planned CapEx expectations. From January through April, these numbers were great. And everybody's like, we're going to spend a lot more than you think we're going to spend. And then in May, all of a sudden, we saw a big nosedive, especially in industrials companies, tech companies. So companies are already saying, I don't know what the world is going to look like next month or next year. So why would I start ramping up my, you know, my factory building at this point?
So, Savita, based upon that, how would you then judge the change in earnings revisions downward? So it seems to me you just put out a note where you've talked about you've downgraded a little bit.
Yeah, we took down our numbers. And let me tell you, so we took down our numbers simply on the direct impact of the tariffs. So this is basically, you know, the extra prices that we're going to pay for Mexico and China stuff, as well as the potential hit to our exports. We're not factoring in anything indirect. And here, I think the missing link is that some of the indirect impacts could actually be positive for U.S. earnings, right? I mean, the whole point that we're doing these tariffs in the first place is to bring jobs back to the United States. And if that actually happens, that could be a huge spigot of growth that nobody is factoring in.
Aren't the labor markets too tight? I mean, are we running into jobs?
That's why they said the ADP report was weak, because they couldn't find
people. Yeah, because you can't find people anymore. But, I mean, look at automation. I mean, robotics is still a thing. We haven't fully automated everything. There's huge gains to be made there. I mean, I don't say this happens in the next 6 months, but I think there's a longer-term, potentially bullish theme that we're not necessarily factoring into any estimate.
They're saying goodbye, Mayor. I think they mean to you, right? You don't want me to leave.
I don't know why we do that.
Where are you going? I don't know. But I mean, you got another 45 minutes.
Okay, no, it's Savita. It's not me. I'm staying. Savita, thank you. Are we heading into a recession, Guy?
I don't know the answer to that, but I'll say this. Why do we look at recessions and say it's such a bad thing? It's a natural part of the business cycle. I mean, it's not a terrible thing to go through a recession, right? I mean, it should be a natural part. It should happen every few years or so. We talk about it like this horrible thing. I'll say this. In the Fed trying to stave off the recessions, they've made any downturn that much worse. They've made U.S. corporations in large part lazy because they don't have to focus on their business. They borrow cheap money, buy back their stock, pay a dividend, and everybody's happy. Say, well, give me an example. I'll give you an example. Look at General Electric over the last 10 years, and look at IBM as well.
God, you're sour. She'll be back
Those are dysfunctional companies on their own.
He's
I don't think that's angry, though.
The Fed.
Not angry. I'm happy as can be.
Mel will be back.
She'll
be back. Coming up, Walmart's shareholder meeting had one interesting guest, presidential candidate Bernie Sanders, fighting for higher wages for workers. We'll tell you what it could mean for retail stocks. Plus, the man who helped the government build its case against Microsoft is here to tell us which big tech companies are the most at risk of getting broken up. Oh, I hear an ambulance right now. And then later, that's why I said magnetic business cards. Call
he's
me.
He's
going
to be here in a little while.
Later,
Pete
Najarian is stepping up to the plate for his fast pitch. He says there's one name hitting an all-time high that has more room to run. We've got much more fast money after this.
You are.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
It's not a radical idea. I'm asking Walmart, the employees are asking Walmart, pay the workers there a living wage. You don't get rich on $15 an hour, that's for sure. But at the very least, you could live with some security and dignity.
Well, if you couldn't figure it out, that was Senator Bernie Sanders, it says here, after a pairing at Walmart's shareholder meeting today where he called on the retailer to give workers a seat on the board and to raise its minimum wage to $15 an hour from $11. Walmart not alone in hearing calls for higher wages. Competitor Costco just raised its minimum wage up to $15 an hour in April, and Target bumped its up to $13 an hour this month. How big of a risk is this wage battle to retailers, Karen? And wages
The labor market's tight.
It's going to happen organically.
I think it's
a moot point, isn't it?
Well, but I mean, retailers are really getting stretched. We saw, you know, with them needing to have online
delivery,
right?
Because
not
of Bernie,
because of where we are in the economic cycle.
I guess, you know, if you want some inflation, that's the right. If you raise wages, you're going to have that. I'm concerned about some of the retail elements out there. One thing, though, that is working in favor for the retailers, if you look at what's happened actually with the oil move today, look at gas prices, which lag a little bit. That's going to be one thing that's going to help consumers be able to still, you know, Americans love to shop. So that's important to help. But I think the wage thing is real. I think that it will be absorbed, though.
I think the wage thing, Joe, is real only when you drop it in the middle of a sector, a consumer staple sector, in a big box store that has an unbelievably competitive landscape. So look at Kroger, for example, who was cutting prices last year to gain market share. It actually worked somewhat. And again, these guys are all in massive competition with each other. And no one can compete with Walmart, who at one point let go of the ability or the desire, I should say, to compete on price. Kroger has been raising prices. It's been killing volumes. If you look at the week, I was just reading this report from Wolf, which points out that these guys are basically at their highest prices since July of 2018, and volumes are suffering with that. So the consumer is sensitive. They're going to go for price, and they're all competing with each other, and labor is an input that's, I think, hurting them all. I don't think you need to run into this sector at all.
I like this surgical approach to the whole issue, but hearing Bernie say no one's going to get rich at $15 an hour, that's true, but you get an entry-level position. If you raise it higher than $15 an hour, there's no entry-level positions left. The worst minimum wage is zero when there aren't any jobs. And we seem to understand that wage price controls didn't work when President Ford, well, you guys probably don't, when President Ford whipped inflation and wage price controls under Nixon, it is a wage control, and the market needs to dictate price. Are any retailers still paying $7 an hour, which
probably
is where
not.
The federal minimum wage is, right?
No.
Have you seen what happens when you go to 15 in a city like Seattle or place, and suddenly businesses start shutting down? It should be organically in a strong economy. People can ask for more money, right?
But yes, I agree with that. But there's another part of it, which is, do the retailers get hurt if they have to work?
That's what I mean. You guys are looking surgically at there will be higher wages.
But I think if you look at a Costco, which has had higher wages, they do get a very good multiple, because they have had better relations with their employees than some that
more
don't.
Loyalty, so, they get to attract good
people. So there is a virtuous cycle that goes on there as well. I think that Walmart can absorb higher wages.
But if you were to talk to Bernie and say, okay, I guess if you said, how about 50 an hour? Does he understand that there is a breaking point when you get up to a certain point where it actually you start losing jobs, people at entry-level positions can't work anymore? Anyway, for more, look at their... I think that means I need to read. For more, got a little vertigo there. For more on Walmart and what's next for the stock, head on over to CNBC.com. In the meantime, here's what else is coming up on Fast Money.
I don't think anybody reasonable is going to come to the conclusion that Apple's a monopoly.
Not so fast, Tim. The man who helped the government take on Microsoft will tell us why big tech today is a big risk. Plus, Pete Najarian is stepping up to the plate to pitch one name that's hitting an all-time high today. He'll explain why he thinks there's more room to run. We've got much more Fast Money right after this break.
1 in 8. That's how many people have worked at a McDonald's. Who'll serve millions the best Big Mac and best birthday party they've ever had? Who haven't just seen kids graduate from a Happy Meal, but have gotten help graduating themselves? Because they know the skills learned here.
Bienvenidos. Welcome to English Under the Arches.
Can por help favor, you grow Abbas. From here or keep growing here.
Hi, welcome to
1 in 8 start at McDonald's. And where you start stays with you.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Apple spiking today after CEO Tim Cook says Apple will be safe if the U.S.-China trade war escalates, even if it does. But Just as it gets potential relief on that front, its legal troubles back home could be getting started. I don't want this to happen, Josh. If there's anything you can do, I like all my Apple stuff. Leave this company alone. It's the greatest company in the world. Josh Lipton is in San Francisco with more.
Joe, two app developers have now filed a suit in California against the iPhone maker, claiming they are compelled to sell their iOS apps via the App Store because Apple has monopoly power, in their words, over app distribution, that Apple has charged developers an overly expensive commission of 30% for nearly 11 years. Suit also claims Apple stifles innovation. Apple, for its part, saying it doesn't comment on lawsuits. This is another legal challenge for the App Store. Remember, just last month, the U.S. Supreme Court handed Apple a setback, allowing antitrust suits against the App Store to proceed. Plaintiffs in that case also argue that Apple monopolizes the market. But CEO Tim Cook has come out swinging, flatly rejecting that argument.
I think that with size, I think scrutiny is fair. I think we should be scrutinized. I don't think anybody reasonable is going to come to the conclusion that Apple's a monopoly. Our share is much more modest. We don't have a dominant position in any market.
So you're saying you're not a monopoly?
We are not a monopoly.
The new suit comes today as Apple is among those tech titans now reportedly facing potential U.S. antitrust probes. Now, we don't know what the government's possible concern could focus on here, but Dan Ives of Wedbush thinks the App Store would be front and center in any such possible inquiry, that the DOJ would be looking at whether its subscription fees from developers and the use of that store are in any way anti-competitive. Investors would certainly take notice if that happened. The App Store is estimated to represent 35% of that broader services segment. Joe, back to you.
All right. Thanks, Josh. Let's trade it.
Pete. All right. Well, Katie Hubert is my favorite analyst, and she actually broke this down already this morning. She talked about a couple of different things, the trade war being one of them, how much that could impact the stock itself. And the other one was this entire topic. And she thinks it's about $13 to the stock. Right now, she's at 231. She remains at 231. But she actually sees the concerns here. So are they really hampering innovation? I wouldn't think so. But I think Tim Cook makes a very good point. I don't know that you can call them a monopoly either, Joe. I mean, I think that they have a decent share, but they absolutely don't have a dominant share to the point where they're not competition, because there absolutely is. There is Apple, there is Samsung, there's all the different phones here in the U.S., and obviously when you go overseas, they are not as dominant as people would think. We would like them to be as shareholders, but they aren't.
You're going to have to rewrite these laws for antitrust to somehow take into account a whole different model for these tech companies, because consumers are not being harmed. I pay zero for almost everything that I do on Apple. And right. As far as, almost zero.
Almost.
Right?
And by the way, I'm with you so far. I agree.
If we're suddenly going to go the euro model, where we start thinking about competitors, and oh my gosh, competitors, there might be layoffs because they're not as good as Apple. That's not Apple's problem.
Right.
All right? And all of a sudden, what does Facebook, Amazon, Apple, they all have something similar that causes them to be suddenly in the crosshairs? Why? Because they're big and good at what they do.
No, they're good.
Because they're big and good at what they do. You're supposed to want to try to get a monopoly, a legal monopoly. Everybody wants to use you. So I'm going to see what this lawyer says. But
it's a fine line between where, you know, a dominant product is a dominant product because it's so far ahead of the competition.
Right.
One of the big issues for Apple is also not only alternatives to the App Store and a China trade war, but also just that there's a lower price phone that's almost as good as the iPhone. So far, it's been at a place where there's been nothing that's been really rivaling them at this price point. So does that give them a antitrust dynamic? I agree with you, Joe, but the argument is that competitors can't get in there and have a fair spot on the App Store without Apple dictating the terms.
It reminded me, I mentioned it this morning, it reminded me a little of net neutrality, where AT&T or Comcast, they build out, they spend billions of dollars building out all of this pipe, and then they're not allowed to charge people for what they built out, like it's some utility or something. There are costs to things like this. The market can dictate. What you said? Who did you say? No one's right of me. Did you say? You said that earlier. Is this one of those instances?
I said I'm sitting to your left.
I know. You're sitting my left, like everyone. But I don't understand this.
Anyone could be.
Regulatory scrutiny piling up for big tech. Our next guest says there's one name that's most at risk, and Gary Reback was the antitrust attorney in Silicon Valley that led the push in the government's case against Microsoft in the 90s. He joins us now. And Gary, we're talking about you on Squawk Box, or the Microsoft case, that actually it probably did eventually effectuate some good things for technology. I thought it set back Microsoft like 10, 15 years. The stock did nothing and needed a new CEO and needed Ballmer to sort of just build a moat for years and years. But there was something positive, I guess, about the action it was taken, in your view.
Oh, I think it was extremely consequential. I mean, if you go back, say, 14 or 15 years before the smartphone, and Microsoft had like 97 or 98% of the browser market, the only way you could get to Google was type www.google.com in the Microsoft browser. But of course, if you did that, there was no technical reason why Microsoft had to take you there. They could have just put up a big warning screen that said, don't go to this site. It steals your personal information without your permission. And had they done that, I think they would have killed Google in the cradle. Why didn't they do that? I've always thought that it was because of the risk of additional antitrust enforcement. They were already underwater. And about a year ago, the New York Times went out and interviewed some Microsoft people, and they said, yeah, that's right, that we didn't take those steps because of the fear of antitrust enforcement.
Okay.
So that opened the market for Google, right, and Facebook and Amazon in a way that they would have never flourished.
And you think now Google is in a similar position? I'll tell you what I keep coming back to, Gary, and that is the golden egg and the goose. And I look at Europe and I try to think of a great innovative company that has changed the world in the last 10, 15, 20 years. And over here, I can come up with like 10 of them. Over there, what do they got? SAP, what have they come up with? Why do we want to? It's a fine line to walk between making sure that there's, you know, that no one is unfairly hampering competitors, but you don't want to ruin great American companies that have innovated and given us all this great stuff, where consumers haven't really been harmed.
So you certainly don't want to imperil innovation, but I think your framework is a little misplaced here. All of my clients have always been American companies, with perhaps one or two very minor exceptions. They're American companies. They deserve the right to compete in the American marketplace. If you go back and look at what Google did, you'll recall that the FTC inadvertently released a huge portion of their staff report a couple of years ago to the Wall Street Journal. And the Wall Street Journal published it, and it's still on the Wall Street Journal site, and it says what Google was doing. And it's bad stuff. I mean, they were putting their own properties ahead of competitors, even when their own algorithm said that competitors should be first. They were making lists of competitors to demote in the search results, even when their own algorithm wouldn't support that. It was bad stuff. It wasn't fair competition.
And they said they'd never do that, too. They'd never do any evil. So that's even worse, because they were never supposed to. I understand that. I wish we're going to have you back. Or maybe I've come on. Oh, I'm not allowed to do that. Melissa got mad when I said come on Squawk Box. I can't invite you on.
We'll have you back on Fast, Gary.
We'll have you back on Fast.
Great to have you.
Because I want to talk about it more. And you've got some insight here. I'm ready to just, you know, I love these companies so much, I'm ready to say have at it. But anyway, you make some very good points. I appreciate that. But we'll have you back. Let's trade it. Who wants to talk about it?
So Gary, one of his notes and the point that he's getting at with Google is that he thinks they are the most at risk. So let's just go right into the market.
Company,
and Google right now is trading like the most at risk, whether you think so or not. What are the remedies? You know, there are those that think there are a number of properties at Google you could begin to spin out, including YouTube, which is very undervalued and would be accretive, I think, to the valuation. I'm sorry?
Yeah, no, I just... That's
why is that? Why can't Google have YouTube? I don't understand that. Why?
It's not that they can't have it. I think as a shareholder, but if you ask shareholders what they would want, they might be in favor of that.
Oh, well, that's fine if you enhance shareholder value. But just in terms, I don't see how that gives them some kind of competitive. What's wrong?
Huh?
You got anything?
No, my head.
You got anything? What do you got?
So
down.
It looked like he was fading.
I know. I was just thinking about. I know what you're thinking. Got a lot of my mind.
Thursday cannot come fast enough. Anyway, still ahead. Stitch Fix soaring after its earnings report. That stock on an absolute tear this year. I'm going to tell you what's behind the move. Plus, Pete's bringing the heat to pitch one staple stock that he says could put a little pep in your portfolio. It just hit a new high today. The name when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Consumer staples rallying alongside the broader markets today after posting its worst drop of the year yesterday. And Pete Najarian has left the set. He says that he's even more impressive looking, standing up. He says there's one name in the sector that's headed for an even bigger pop. Look at that man.
Wow. Jacked. He's jacked.
So, Joe, here's what I'm pitching you. I'm going to pitch you Pepsi, and here's why. I love the CEO, the fact that he looks like he's brand new. He's really not brand new. He's been there for 22 years, and he's been working regionally around the globe. So he's got great exposure internationally, and here he is now in the United States, where 57% of their revenue comes from. So I think he's really the right guy at the right time, and that's exactly what Indra Nooyi talked about when she stepped down. The dividend yield of almost 3% is pretty phenomenal. You know, over the last 10 years, they've shrunk the share count by buybacks by 10% as well. Fundamentally, this stock trades at a very, very favorable fundamental PE presently. So that's important to me. The fundamentals are all there. Do they have growth? Yeah. The snack business is absolutely booming. It grew 5.5% year over year in the last quarter, and that's now 40% of their profits. So this is a company that really seems to be moving in the right direction. And you look over the last decade, you're looking at earnings growth that's very impressive, revenue growth that's very impressive as well. So this is a company that's growing. Now, it's not growing at any kind of a tech-type level, but this is a company that's still growing, still grinding it out, and I think for the value, this isn't a trade. This is long-term. I've been in this for over a decade now, so I think Pepsi is one of these stocks that just continues to grind and grind higher, and I think that's part of the whole growth story that they've got and some acquisitions, including SodaStream. So I think they're doing the right things when they can, and that mix of the salt, the snacks, along with the soda, I think that all comes out very favorable. Here's the thing. If you just look at a short term, you'd say, wow, that's too much. But you go back and you can actually see it's really not made the move that a lot of people had expected. That's what I'm looking for, though, a nice grinding move to the upside. I think that's what Pepsi gives you.
All right. Who has questions for Pete?
Pete, I guess ultimately it comes down to if you look at the bright spot in the snack business, I think it's been extraordinary. There's a lot of competition out there and the comps are very, very difficult. Do you worry about the multiple you're paying for this company?
I'm not worried about the multiple, Tim, because overall, right now, presently, it's trading somewhere 14, 15. The forward might be edging towards 20, but because of the growth is not huge, but where the growth is right now, I think can support where it is trading. And I still think there's plenty of upside in terms of can they make more acquisitions to diversify even more? I think absolutely. Matter of fact, keep an eye on the cannabis world.
Okay, no more questions. Time to vote. Are you buying Pete's pitch on Pepsi? Tim, yeah?
Yeah, I'm just getting done with my picture of Pete holding the green Pepsi. And I'm a buyer. I'm a believer in Pepsi as an emerging markets guy. This is one of the companies that's been a global leader both in the snack business and their ability to diversify their business, and they're actually growing in those demographics.
A really good picture.
Yeah, he's very good. Yeah. I'm terrible, actually. Yeah. But I'm a buyer as well. I like the story for a lot of what Tim says. I think in the near term, the global growth will probably hurt them with the dollar where it is. But for the longer term, I like the story.
You got a red sky, or what is
that? No,
oh, that's the logo.
Pepsi
okay,
logo.
All right.
Yeah,
logo.
Yeah, yeah.
See, I'm not very artistic, as you know, Joe, but I wrote there, and Petey can probably see it, I love Fritos. And you'd be like, well, that's dopey.
No, it's not dopey.
Fritos, because Doritos. If you like Coke at 22 times forward earnings, you got to love Pepsi at the same multiple. Pepsi's a better company. Despite the move higher, I think it's got room. And I'll tell you this quickly. Goldman Sachs has been so behind the eight ball on this sucker. They just upgraded it to neutral from sell. They need one more upgrade. The stock goes higher.
I was going to say, what's your favorite toes, honestly? Because how many
Fritos.
Are there? Cheetos, Fritos, Tostitos, Doritos.
A Cool Ranch Doritos.
You like the toes.
I like them all.
Yeah.
I do. I like them all. I like.
It looks like it.
I like that sound effect. I really do. All right. The desk, is that Beavis? I don't know. Anyway, the desk has spoken. But are you at home buying Pete's Pepsi pitch? Vote in our Twitter poll. We'll reveal the results later in the show. Plus, check out Stitch Fix, which is not easy to say, surging after its earnings report. It's one of the top performers in the retail sector this year. We got more on that move right after the break. Welcome back to Fast Money. Stitch soaring nearly 30% after its earnings report. Leslie Picker. Back at CNBC headquarters with more. Leslie.
Hey, Joe.
Good morning.
That's what I normally say.
Good morning. I know it's weird to say good evening to you. I know. What time is it? It's 5 o'clock somewhere. Anyway, Joe, Stitch Fix's call is ongoing. That stock surging after the company beat on both the top and bottom lines, showing a surprise profit of 7 cents when the street was expecting a loss. Stitch Fix offers online personal styling and last year started a subscription service called Style Pass. Instead of charging $20 for a so-called style fee, each time a user gets a shipment, the Style Pass costs $49 a year and covers all their style fees. CEO Katrina Lake says Style Pass's renewal rate exceeded 70% and contributed to both revenue and user retention. Stitch Fix, you're right, it is hard to say, has been expanding in other new areas as well, men's, kids, and in the UK. Lake was asked on the call about expanding into rentals, and she responded by saying that it could be a future opportunity for the company. Stitch Fix's stock price surging more than 30% on today's earnings, and it's common to see significant moves when Stitch Fix reports. The last 4 quarters post-earnings day moves included double-digit percentage gains and losses. That volatility is largely due to the company's small float and large amount of short interest, Joe.
That's crazy, Leslie. 30%. Thank you. Let's trade it. Karen, 30%.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like in this. There's not a lot to like if you are short Stitch Fix, which is most of the reason for the move. So, I mean, I think it was 24% short interest, which is enormous. So big revenue numbers, that's great for them. Good retention numbers, I mean, guide higher. That's all good. For me, I could never get on board just the valuation, even here, you know, lower or higher than where it started the day or where it's ending the day at 30. Either of those are too high for me. But, I mean, good for them for getting some momentum. I don't know what you do if you're a short seller here.
It is small, isn't it? The float is small.
Float is small. The dynamics are bad. Where it could go to.
But there's enough guidance there. There's enough guidance and good news there in their outlook to say that, you know, they've turned a corner here, or that they're justifying that multiple with their growth. So, agree with Karen, but wouldn't chase it.
All right, we got to keep moving, as you know. Yeah. Beyond Meat reporting earnings for the first time tomorrow. That stock soaring out of the gate despite falling today, up 300% since debuting back on May 2nd. And the options market says another huge move, which Guy had after actually eating one of these burgers, could be coming. Mike Coe is out in San Francisco.
That's true, isn't it?
That's 100%
isn't that true.
I'm
sorry, Mike.
Let's be sure to move on from that one. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, beyond... You know, beyond it, the options market's implying a very big move here, about 14%. And you were just talking about Stitch Fix's large short interest. It's actually higher in beyond, about 35%. And that might account for the very unusual trade we saw today, which was a purchase of the June 155-160 call spread. Consider how far out of the money that is. The buyer of that obviously is expecting some kind of a very short-term and very severe spike, and that could be betting on some kind of short covering after they report earnings tomorrow. And again, it's implying about a 14% move. Overall, though, because of that high short interest, the options market is predicting that the stock market is, that this thing is going to go a little bit lower June and July, maybe 4 to 6%.
You had one, T-Bone? You had one of these?
T-Bone.
I have.
Why they call him Coco?
Hey, T-Bone!
I have Coco. T-Bone!
T-Bone!
You had one? Or not?
Look. I absolutely have had one. I mean, look, everybody wants to eat less red meat. I wish these things tasted even better than they do. When they make a porterhouse, when they start making pastrami, when they start making brisket, then I'm on board. But until then, I don't think so.
Likes a good porterhouse.
Let's trade it, Guy. And if you got any
insight,
personal,
I have a lot of insight. I mean, this is a different show. It's like Dr. Oz or something. So listen, if you were fortunate enough to get in this stock, let's say at $50, right after it opened at $46, you have now doubled it, right? So you're in this. If you sell half your position, you're in it for free. I'm preaching what Pete talks about all the time. Trade the stock. Don't let the stock trade you. Get out of half before earnings tomorrow.
Okay. Nice. Very good. For more options action, check out the full show Friday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern, or head to the website optionsaction.com. Plus, check out the pot stocks on fire this year. Bank of America just doubled down on one of those names. We'll tell you what has them so bullish when Fast Money returns. Welcome back. We actually have some breaking news on the trade talks between Mexico and the U.S., and Kayla Tauscia is outside the White House with the details. Kayla.
Joe, after about 90 minutes meeting between the U.S. and Mexico delegation, NBC News is reporting, according to a senior administration official, that there is no deal that has been reached. Now, this is largely consistent with what we have been hearing about the expectations for today's meeting, given that the president is overseas, as is much of his immigration policy team. That being said, we did expect there to be some ground broken, some compromise perhaps discussed on how to move forward. We're still awaiting any statement from the White House and from the delegation that was negotiating. But according to NBC News at this time, a senior administration official says no deal to avert those tariffs has been reached. Joe?
Yep. Definitely need some color there, Kayla. I don't know when we'll get it, and we'll see how the futures react eventually later tonight. I don't know how much we were counting on. After Navarro, I thought there might be something, right?
Well, Navarro's comments this morning saying that the threat of the tariffs had definitely gotten Mexico's attention and had brought them to the negotiating table. That being said, I was told by a senior official earlier today that today's meeting was seen as the starting line for negotiations, not necessarily the finish line. We know that President Trump likes to be the closer on his own deals, and given that he wasn't in the room today, that would make it hard. Right.
And we just hear that Fitch downgraded, as you can see there on the, what's that thing called, a lower third?
Lower third.
Yeah, Chiron.
Everybody's got one.
Thank you.
He just says lower.
Fitch downgrades Mexico's credit rating to BBB. Thanks, Kay. We'll probably see you tomorrow. I'm not allowed to actually mention that there's a show called Squawk Box in the morning, though.
Did.
Hopefully. Oh, I did. That's right. Anyway.
It's fine.
All right.
It's a great show.
Okay, Kayla. Thanks. Up next, final trades. Time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn, Pete.
I'm going to give you Dropbox. Giddy up. Some huge buying in there. Kohl's upside. I think it's going higher.
Dropbox. Okay, Pete. Oh, sorry, Tim.
I'm Tim. I was so moved by Pete's power fast pitch for Pepsi. I'm actually going with Coca-Cola. And in this environment where everyone bristles at this valuation, I think Coke's free cash flow in this environment is what you want to own.
Karen.
Yeah, even with the two-day rally, I am concerned about this market. I'm concerned about trade. These headlines don't help. S&P puts, Vic, Pete called it earlier, VIX is too low here.
Really?
Nice.
How are you feeling, guy?
Nice.
No, I feel fine. And Joe, I so enjoy having you with us at 5 o'clock. I know this is hard. You got to get up at like 3 in the morning and do your show.
No, it's hard getting back
6
in here.
To 9.
Getting back in here from Jersey.
But thank you. I think you. On behalf of all of us.
Yes. On behalf of us all.
Can we just get it just
clap them out.
A little golf clap for a golfer.
Costco trades really well, Joe Kernan.
I'm
don't
scheduled
don't,
to come
don't
back.
Sleep on
Costco. I will
Costco.
Be back 2 weeks box. From today. Right. 2 weeks from today or maybe yesterday. Mad Money starts right now with Jim.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.